What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI Afternoons, hour number two. Ted Johnson in the house. How are we doing today, Teddy?
I'm good, boys. How are we doing?
We're reacting to breaking Red Sox news.
How about that?
You know, we're mid-rip job of Sam Kennedy and the Sox and no signings, and then boom, you get a free agent starter, a number two starter. I will say, just I was skimming the Twitch chat and the text line during the break. Not sure it's resonating in a totally popular way with the fans.
If you get a 2/3 starter at market value, when you're obviously going to have to pivot to winning with pitching and defense and hope that the development of your young hitters continues, what's wrong with that? I'm not giving them a break. I'm not giving them a mulligan. I'm not taking back anything I'd said up to this point. But what's wrong with this?
A lot of people latching on to that. The exciting signing. Now we'll lose 80 games 3-2. Or great, so we'll win baseball games 2-1. SMH.
I can't deserve this. Not only can't have, we don't deserve nice things.
Yeah, we do. We're Boston, baby.
I feel like I still deserve a power bat. Yeah. That'd be my 2 cents on that.
Okay, we'll give you your time later for your Fernando Tatis is still out there, and they want Duran, and the deal makes too much sense.
Holy smokes.
No, see, you guys are doing it for me now, which means my job here is done.
All right, it is 3 o'clock. We got three hosts. We got three opinions, or maybe one opinion that takes over the whole damn segment. That's happened before. It is time for the three-point stance.
We need teams!
Just count to three.
That's three!
Three shall be the number thou shalt count.
Pierce for three. It's good!
Three fabulous flyers.
And the number of the counting shall be three.
Got tip scores! Ties it 3-3!
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons. Three hosts, each of which will hopefully, unless a Jacksonville reporter has something else to say, give their stances on the biggest stories in the world of Boston sports and beyond. Today, given that Andy and Fitzy have had the hour to react to all things Red Sox, we will lead off with Ted Johnson. And Ted, you get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
I'm ready, bud.
All right, here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, so I was listening to Arcan last night, and I thought it was great. He was talking about the Red Sox. I'm going to hit the Red Sox just real quick here, guys, before we move on to football. But just a good discussion about the Red Sox and inactivity up to this point. This signing with Ranger Suarez notwithstanding. I still think it's important to kind of dissect what the Red Sox have done up to this point. But he talks about a disconnect maybe being an issue in the Red Sox organization. Take a listen. This is him throwing to sound of Jonathan Papelbon talking about the moves the Red Sox have made so far and the possible disconnect it might have.
I think it continues that there is a disconnect. Like, the thing is, though, is there a disconnect between AC, Jason Varitek, and some of these guys that are on staff with the front office? That's my big concern right now.
And that's courtesy of the Foul Territory show right there. I thought Jonathan Papelbon was excellent, some of the sound I heard. But just, you worry about the disconnect with Alex Cora, Varitek, two former players with the front office not making the moves. And even though they signed Ranger Suarez today, which was nice, I still think they're two moves away. They're still two big moves away, especially two big bats, at least one big bat, and a medium bat, if you will. If you think about how did they lose that series against the Yankees in the playoffs?
Hitting.
Could not hit the ball. I said before the free agency period started that Sonny Gray needed to be their fourth best free agent pickup. Right now, and that was assuming Alex Bregman was coming back. Right now, it's basically what Wilson Contreras, Ranger Suarez, and I still think they're two moves away, so I don't count those two guys as two. I count them as one because Alex Bregman was supposed to be back on his team. So to me, they're still two big moves away from getting to where they were last year, and then even better. They need to be better than they were last year, and they're still two moves away, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean they're better than they were 2 hours ago. That's true. But are they better than when they ended the season and the momentum and you're a playoff team, you're a wild card team? Hell, We thought they were supposed to win that series, right? You win game one, you're going to win game two. Oh, it didn't really work out. Whatever.
But we're still thrilled that Eaton didn't leave from third,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And real quick, is it pretty clear that at this point we know what the Red Sox playbook is when it comes to signing players? It almost feels like they have the list of principles and outlined, bullet-pointed in their offices. Mm. It's one is you don't sign guys over 30 to long-term deals. You don't give no trade clauses to guys over in their 30s, mm-hmm. and then we're very reactionary. We react to what the fans have to say. Those are three staples that are clearly defined in that in front office.
So over 30 is key because Suarez has just hit 30. He's like a 2 months, 3 months, I don't even know, a couple months into his 30.
Are they getting a birth certificate, Grace?
Well, he is from Venezuela, I don't know how that birth certificate might
He's a man without a country.
But no, it is interesting. Do you think this is a reactionary signing? Do you think this was part of the plan all along? Or Bregman's gone, we got to do something, pivot?
I don't know how you don't see it as reactionary because this has been their playbook. This is what they do in the past. It's the same thing over and over again.
Ted, we always hear the word alignment, right? Remember last year we just joked all summer long, oh, we're all in alignment. It was the word of the day. Had to do a shot or like Pee Wee's Playhouse, everyone would scream. This year I think it's pivot. I think they are like their ability to pivot and not just pivot like, oh, we had all these guys on our big board. If we couldn't get him, we got this guy. They seem to have a game plan. And when logic dictates that that game plan should blow up because Bregman's like, oh, wait a second. You wanted me to take a deal with a no trade without any trade clause on my behalf after I watched you trade your third baseman last year because he was unhappy you didn't tell him that I was coming to town? No. And you lose the guy that everybody said was one of the main reasons why you went back to the postseason last year. It all just feels reactionary.
Yeah, they can't anticipate the moves. I mean, you got a guy in Alex Bregman who's had, I'm sure they made it clear to him that he has young kids, he wanted stability, he didn't want to be traded, and they still thought, you know, their offer was going to be the best offer, and it wasn't. And I thought Arcan made a good point last night, too. If you think about the 2021 season, there was a lot of pressure for the Red Sox to do something at the trade deadline, right? They did, right? And then we thought the 2022 season, it was going to be hype, and they were going to all of a sudden go back to their spending ways, and they didn't.
Correct.
And the same thing this year. We thought they were going to go back to their spending ways after the success they had last year in this offseason. I know they just signed Ranger Suarez, so maybe the timing of this three-point stance isn't the best. I just still think they still got work to do. They're not done yet, even with this signing.
So two things. First of all, this is another example of they don't know the market because all we heard was they were going to get Joe Ryan, and they thought it was done. It was at the five-yard line. They were just looking to punch it in, and then you hear out of Minnesota, you weren't even really close. Like, so their ability, it's similar to this, right? They think they've done enough with Alex Bregman to sign him. They don't believe there's another team. They don't believe there's better offers out there. Well, guess what? There was another team, and there were better offers out there willing to give more money, more timely money, and the no-trade clause. So that idea of them knowing the market, Craig Breslow and whoever else is involved in these discussions, it's questionable right now. And then the audio you just played, to me, plays into something that Dan Ball, the brains behind the glass there, has been talking about for a year plus now. So Papelbon says, I don't know if they're all on the same page. I don't know if Veritek and Cora are on the same page with the front office. Huh, so Papelbon thinks those two are aligned on the front, the same page, Dan Ball. And in your theory, Dan Ball,
yeah,
who's going to be the manager and who's going to be the GM of the Red Sox moving forward?
Well, the backup option was Alex Bregman, so you can take that one off the table because he's not a member of the Cubs. In my estimation, if you were to move on from Craig Breslow for the sake of getting the organization on the same page, Alex Cora is running your baseball operations, and Jason Veritek would be kind of the manager in waiting based on the fact that he is viewed in a very strong light in terms of what he does. He's the game planning coordinator. Like, he has a lot to do with the day-to-day. So I like that, and those are two guys that we'll see eye-to-eye with one another.
And there is Fitzy, they're in alignment, and I also think it's interesting, and this is a me problem potentially. There may not be anything to this, but when guys like Papelbon, who works for Nesson, is saying things like this that are a little bit biting and critical of what's going on, I perk up. Why is he saying that? Why does he feel the freedom to say that? It reminds me of when Brian Scalabrine a few years ago started talking about trade offers for Jaylen Brown and having to take those seriously, and they should trade Jaylen Brown. I was like, oh, on NBC Sports Boston, we're talking about that. Why does he have that freedom? I wonder if Papelbon knows something. You might be onto something, Dan Ball. You've had a good year. You might be onto something with Alex Cora in the front office sooner rather than later.
This would be his last year managing?
Yep. Maybe not even the full year.
Haven't we thought, though, before that that would seem like a likely ascension? That's why they hold on to Veritek?
Well, that guy's been talking about it for 2+ years.
And I'll add something else to the mix, too.
He's only been here a year and a half.
Part of the reporting about out of Mass Live from the whole Bregman deal was that...
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Bregman was worried that Craig Breslow would be replaced by a new head of baseball operations that would then see him as a trade piece versus somebody who they wanted on the roster long-term. So the players are seeing Breslow in a negative light. Yeah. I think it adds to the potential theory of getting your organization from level to level to level on the same page with one another.
And one more point about this Bregman thing, because it's a fascinating topic that just with the Patriots doing so well, just we haven't had time, but to me, what's fascinating is that you're paying for him to, yes, be your third baseman and to be a guy in the top of your order, but you're also paying him to be a mentor to the younger players. Mm-hmm. This is a young team. You need veteran guys that have accomplished what Bregman's accomplished to help them along. It's 162 games. So overpaying for him, you're paying for him to be not only a player, but you're also a phenomenal mentor and probably a better mentor than any of the coaches could be. So,
like a bench coach, sort of.
It's another bench coach, Fitzy. So they blew a big opportunity, in my opinion.
And I'll double down on that and say it's another guy who is a fan favorite who you're not overextending to try to keep. It's another guy who further alienates your fan base by not having them return. Added to, I think you listed this to begin the week, Fitzy. It's the Betts, the Bogarts, the Lesters, the guys that people had jerseys of and loved to show
they
up.
They never
watch.
Should have left town. I call them the cradle to gravers. These are the guys that should have gone box to wire in the same uniform. They never wanted to leave, and they had very special stories as to why they were here, like significant moments in Red Sox history, and they undervalued them, and then they ended up
finishing. Who doesn't get that part of it? The humanness
John
part.
Henry?
Just the nerds, the analytics guys, the guys that just crunch numbers and look at data. They don't know emotion. They don't care about, I don't know, loving players and why you might be attached to a player and the emotional. There's so much emotion that is attached to baseball teams that these nerds and analytics guys can't understand.
The romance means nothing to them.
Yeah, nothing.
All right, well, we'll leave that one there. But an interesting twist, because you are seeing the Red Sox fan base still be a bit more tepid after a signing of this magnitude, which I think, numerically speaking, is the biggest free agent starting pitching signing I think since David Price. I'd have to go back and check those numbers once more. But a lot of, again, the big names that you brought in, you've done so via trade. Okay, Andy Hart, are you ready?
I am.
All right, here is 60 seconds for your three-point stance. Go ahead.
So college football, again, we don't talk a lot about it, but there is a lot of interesting stuff going on with the transfer portal, especially at the quarterback position. I don't know if people have been keeping track of this, but you have quarterbacks that are turning down $6+ million a year to play college football. I think Quinn Ewers was actually in that range last year when he decided to leave Texas, come to the NFL, seventh round pick with the Dolphins, got his shot late in the year. Now you have Tyler Simpson, who was in a bidding war in college football. That's the Alabama quarterback. Miami was the last team that was offering over $6 million a year. He wants to go to the NFL. He could end up on the Jets. It could be a terrible decision. Well, Dante Moore said, not me. I was coming to the NFL until I saw who was picking near the top of the draft. Dante Moore is going back to Oregon. I don't have the numbers, but guess what? Him going back to Oregon kind of screws Dominic Raiola, who left Nebraska to go to Oregon because he thought Dante Moore was going to the NFL.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This whole weird quarterback carousel, free agency, college football thing is crazy. And Carson Beck's part of it. We'll watch him in the national championship game. He goes from Georgia because he kind of got bored and they had a lot of money and hot women at Miami. And now he's in the national. But
it's crazy.
I don't know that I even have a handle on what the hell is going on in college football with quarterbacks.
Seven years Carson Beck played college football. Yeah.
Oh, no, Chandler Morse, the kid that wanted to go to North Carolina, but Belichick didn't want him, went to the UVA and had a hell of a year for UVA, wants to play his seventh year.
Yeah, oh, yeah, why not? Lots of guys go to college for 7 years. They're called doctors or quarterbacks.
It's not an amateur sport anymore, so we just need to stop thinking of it in that regard. We need to stop referring to it in that capacity. It is now the second most popular professional sport in America.
It needs to go. I mean, then call it just a feeder system for the NFL. Don't call it college football.
Minor league football.
Honestly, don't go to class. Like, why are they even going to class?
They probably don't. Because I've wondered about that. How does a guy pick a new school mid-January and, like, get an apartment, go to class? Like, please. I feel like he shows up and he's like, hey, you got the playbook? I'll be back when spring practice starts.
Yeah, how am I supposed to take, like, anthropology seriously when I'm being paid $4 million to play quarterback?
I believe that that Indiana might have the oldest roster.
They do.
In the NCAA. Well, no reason that they're the number one team.
And I believe it's getting older in the portal. The guys they're acquiring are getting even older. That's how they do business, and it works.
So you have a son that's kind of, you know, he's experienced this in his way right there. And then I got a buddy who's got a son who played football at Stonehill, and he used that a great season at Stonehill to advance to another higher level.
So you go to
a low level college and then use that film to go to a bigger college.
I love it. And that's the part that I love about it. There's a lot of UNH kids that are going, two of them are going to Wake Forest, one to SMU. The starting quarterback's going to Ohio. Like, he's, and I don't fault them. They used it as a stepping stone and the opportunity and the system that's in place.
Well, it's
but it kind of sucks for football.
Oh, it's awful. But it's awful like going for the kids, too, at the end of the day.
But it's like going to a two-year college and then doing well enough to be able to then take that grade record and then be able to jump up to a proper school and then finish for four and then try to go to grad school.
But team doesn't matter in academics. Team matters in football, and you don't have
to.
You have teams that are put together for months, and then they break up.
The basic principle of college football is unity. We're in it together. It's all about the guy next to you.
Yep.
That's all gone now. All those important kind of life lessons you learn from playing college football, no more.
How about the one around
Trinidad
here?
Chambliss is now going to could potentially go to the pros. You, sir, are a Jet.
He's got to because he doesn't
know. They vetoed.
He won't go that high.
You don't think they'd make a stupid decision like that?
No, I don't. But you mentioned, like, Tom Brady, the classic story. He stuck it out at Michigan, and that created the competitor that lifted your team and your huddle. The second he was on the field, everything felt different. If this were back then, Tom Brady would have had the opportunity to leave Michigan because Drew Henson showed up. He could go make a couple million bucks at wherever, you know, UTEP or something.
And maybe was a higher draft pick and doesn't have that same kind of chip on his shoulder that he would have had because he was the number 199 pick.
Right. When the going got tough, he did like everybody else and just went to a new school where they were going to play him. So I know it's good for the kids that are making money, but I'm not sure it's good for everything and everyone.
It's good for a few.
It's like a quick hit. Feels like a quick hit.
Yeah.
Like maybe the long play would be better off for a lot of teams and a lot of players, but
what's the answer? What's the quick answer? Does the government need to get involved?
Blow up the conferences and just create like North, South, East, and West.
Yeah.
But you can still transfer though. If you still have the transfer portal,
But then you're basically looking as like minor like single, double, and triple A of college football as opposed to conferences.
How do you keep the rosters from churning as much as they are?
Well, my answer would be long-term deals. Like, instead of signing one-year NIL deals, we locked this guy up to a guaranteed four-year deal where he has to...
No trade clause.
Right, no trade clause.
Oh, man.
Like, and maybe the school, as part of the negotiation, has to keep the coach and make sure... We promise you the coach isn't leaving in the next two... I don't know. Yeah. More guaranteed structured contracts feel like that's the answer.
You know what? You do it. You tie players' contracts to the coaches.
Yeah.
If the coach has the 2 years left, then you know, players sign for 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
If they're so hell-bent on playing for that coach kind of thing.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I don't know. Crazy. But it's a mess, and I don't know who.
Let's go, Charlie. Charlie Baker's got a big job.
Well, see, that's the problem. I was just going to say, not only do I not know the answer, I'm not even sure who the person is that'll have the answer and gets to decide it. Is it Charlie Baker? Is it Congress? Is it all the schools getting together at some like consortium and like doing a pact?
You would think. They'd all get together and say, okay, guys, none of this is good for
any
of
us. But you know what
us.
Players would say? You just colluded against us. I feel like that could be a collusion charge if all the schools
That's
get together
true,
against the players.
No easy answer.
Nope, not at all.
All right, we've got plenty of football coming up here over the course of the next hour or so. So Fitzy will put a pin in your 3-point stance for the time being, and Andy Hart, that will wrap up our 3-point stance for today.
Thank you, Dan Ball. Coming up, we do need to touch on, and this is not a Belichick segment. This is just job openings in the NFL. There's 9 of them now. How good are they? What's the best job? What's the worst job? Who's going to get opportunities to take those jobs? Are there enough good coaches to go around for the 9 teams that need a new head coach? Looking at the head coaching carousel in the NFL. That's up next. And reminder, 3:45, weekly chat with Adam Schefter. Football talk next on WEEI.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.